This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to 5-on-3. This is WFUV's best, if only, hockey podcast. And we've got the big three with you today. I'm Nick Palmer, Lou Orlando, James Burley, representatives from the tri-state hockey area. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. I'm not sure when Kwanzaa is, but I know that either that's coming up or it's happened. Festivus, as I think people like to call it. Happy holidays to everyone. Of course, we had a big break, 3 days, four for some teams in hockey. Let's start with this. I hate that there's no hockey for these 4 days because we get home, we're not doing a lot. I'd like to watch hockey, but the World Juniors happened, and at least that's something. How you doing, guys?
I am good, man. I want to, like, this is big. This is a big weekend slash week for the Christian slash Catholic slash Jewish overlap that we have in our Fordham hockey community. So shout out to Nick Palmer, yourself, and Samantha Bohr. Hanukkah the day after Christmas, or Hanukkah starts the day after Christmas. That's awesome.
Kwanzaa's going on right now. Electric. Kwanzaa's the 26th to the 1st.
This is electric. So the great time. Honestly, crazy. There should have been hockey on Christmas Eve. There was no sports happening Christmas Eve. Big missed opportunity for the league. We know this. Very pumped to be with you, boys.
Yeah, I mean, the one regret I have is that, you know, we're doing this virtually because we're all home spending time with our families, which is, of course, right where we all want to be. But, you know, it's always better when we can do this face-to-face in studio back at the Rose Hill campus of Fordham in the Boogie Down Bronx. But suffice it to say, vibes are high. Christmas time, Hanukkah time, holiday time, Kwanzaa time, whatever time it is, it's a good time. And I'm enjoying it. Got to see some hockey as late as the 23rd and then the 27th. Big 3 day stretch there where it felt a little bit empty, but a good break for some of the players and for some of us as beat reporters as well. So I've enjoyed the holidays every bit of it, but excited to get back into the saddle for hockey, and the juniors giving us a couple of surprises early on as well.
Well, let's talk about, I mean, the elephant in the room. Latvia just beat Canada in the World Juniors. Coming into this game, in the tournament's history, Canada has outscored Latvia 41-4. Latvia's never beaten Canada, obviously. And not only that, that's Latvia's third ever win at the World Junior Championships, and it comes against Canada. The name of the game for them was Leonard Feldbergs, and everybody better know his name now. 55 saves through overtime, does not allow a goal in the shootout, and it would be Eriks Mateko who scores Latvia's only goal in the shootout. Wow, you guys, I need initial reactions here.
Well, I guess I can go first then. Yeah. I thought, Lou, you were going to jump in there, but I'll go. I turned this on in the third period when I found out that Latvia had just tied it up to make it 1-1. And then as I turned it on, Canada scored to make it 2-1. And part of me was like, oh, okay, we've seen this story before. Dramatic comeback in an international tournament, comes up short, but, you know, hats off to the underdog in this case, that's Latvia, for putting up a good fight. But then they get a late power play and they score two power play goals in the third period. So they tie it up 2-2 to send it back to overtime with just minutes to go. Mateko is clearly, like, he's up there clearly with a pretty, pretty quality player playing in, I believe, the O. Leonard Feldberg, the goaltender, I think had 40-something saves after regulation and 54 after overtime, which is played in NHL rules 3-on-3 style for 5 minutes before the shootout, which is, of course, five rounds instead of three. And, I mean, he was lights out in the shootout. Ivan Kovic, the Canadian goaltender, was honestly just as good, but the quality of shots from Latvia, they're 20-something to Canada's 50-something. In terms of the high-danger chances, there wasn't that much to split between the two of them. The volume was certainly there for Canada. They're a better team. I know now Canadian fans have taken to Twitter to protest why certain players are there and aren't there, but the fact of the matter is you guys just got goalied by a 19-year-old rookie in the QMJHL in Feldbergs of the Sherbrooke Phoenix. And I mean, he wasn't really on anybody's draft board before the other night, but I'm pretty sure he's gonna make his way into the 2025 NHL draft discussions now.
Pay the man.
And if not 2025, 2026, I think he absolutely showed nerves of steel throughout the shootout. And we went 16 rounds of a shootout, and there was only one goal, and it was the very last shot. I mean, I think a lot of players on both sides. The goaltenders were fantastic in this game, but a lot of players on that Canadian team got to look in the mirror and say, if we really are the gold standard of the hockey world and of this tournament, we got to be able to step up in big moments. And quite frankly, they just wasn't enough of that for Canada.
Lou, I mean, the Canadians have all the skill. And when they went to the shootout, you thought that's where the skill would probably overshadow Latvia. I mean, Gavin McKenna does not score. Calum Ritchie, right? Berkeley Catton. I mean, all of these guys are like big names.
Right.
Fellberg says no.
And it's not like you're in the flow of a game anymore where you can do something. You can come in as the lesser talented team and say, "Hey, we're going to play this way and we're going to be able to negate their skill." It's skater versus goalie. I just think, listen, every year Canada is going to have a spotlight on them in any international tournament, whether it's the Olympics, whether it's juniors. Canada in hockey, they're going to have the spotlight. They're usually going to be the team, the favorite going into any tournament. And I think clearly the last couple of years, maybe the spotlight is too bright for Canada, because this is, people are already saying, is this the biggest juniors upset of this century? I mean, I don't think anyone gave Latvia a fighting chance. When you look at some of the predictions, people were like, this is going to be a 14-1 Canada win. Like, the magnitude of this upset is pretty unreal.
If I can just jump
Yeah.
in real quick, I want to give more flowers to the goaltenders as well, because while the Canadian team has all but four players who have been drafted to an NHL team already, only four haven't. Latvia only has two who have. And one of the players who has not been drafted on the Canadian team is Jack Ivankovic, who's 17 years old, born in 2007, starting over two NHL drafted goalies in this game, was lights out, absolutely lights out. Had his team in front of him fall short for him, unfortunately. And I really think he was absolutely stellar. He deserves some more flowers, but of course Fellberg's is going to take away all the headlines.
I mean,
And both goaltenders for
I'm sure
Canada. Carter George is also great.
you guys remember the soundbite from, I think it was the Swedish coach. I forget what year it was, when he was talking about, they asked him about Canada. And he's like, "What do you expect me to do?" And he's talking about their roster, and he's like, "You know, how many first round picks? And the others are high second rounders, and the one that wasn't has the most NHL games out of all of them." Like, that is, you're talking about the loaded, overwhelming favorite Canada team that has all these top Canadian prospects, that has the guy that's going to go number one overall in the 2026 NHL draft. And on the other side, it's Latvia, and maybe 15, 20% of that roster is going to make it, just is going to get drafted or make it to the league.
It's crazy.
Unreal. But this is what I think the juniors needs to drive viewership, because I really still think that it's a very, it's even an isolated fandom in the hockey community. Like, I'm not sure every single NHL fan is tuning into juniors. I don't think it's like everyone that's a hockey fan usually watches the Olympics and they follow their country. I'm not sure juniors is there yet. I think hockey fans like us obviously stay locked in and watching Team USA. We keep tabs in Canada because we know they're usually the big dogs. You need the opening rounds to have the potential for an upset. And this is not an upset that's going to happen every year. That's why we're talking about it. That's why it's already made big waves. But you need stories like this to catch fire, because then I think it boosts tournaments like this. As someone that in the basketball world is a big fan of college basketball and seeing the younger side of the game, I kind of feel a similar way about juniors. I love watching these junior tournaments. I think they're super fun.
Yeah, it's great, and it's a good time to see what's coming up the pipeline. Also, coming up the pipeline, we need to touch on the fact that Ovi's back on the ice, right? Moving to the NHL. He seemed like at the beginning of the year, and with the way that the first couple of weeks went, that Ovi would have a chance to break the goal scoring record this year. Unfortunately, injury sidelined him for multiple weeks, so it's looking like that will not happen until next season. This Capitals team has not skipped a beat though without Ovechkin, and I think that's the biggest surprise. When Ovi went down, people said, "Oh, okay." I mean, they had a nice run for the first couple of weeks, but this is where. It's going to start to get real for the Capitals, and they keep winning. McMichael, what a revelation for this team. I think he's been their number one star, but everyone's been picking up. I'll start with you, James. What do you like about the Washington Capitals this year? How do you think that they've stayed at the top, and what does a returning Ovi do for this team?
I mean, the returning Ovi is so much more than just hockey, right? Even if the guy's not in the lineup, there's a non-zero chance that 90% of the jerseys being worn at Capital One Arena have the number 8 on the back of them. All right, there's no mystery that this guy is bigger than the sport itself in many ways. And what that brings back to the locker room is not only just another fantastic goal scorer, arguably the greatest this sport's ever seen. It also brings back your leader, your galvanizing figure. Everybody wants to see him break the record in that locker room. He probably won't do it this year, but now that's just an added layer of motivation. They've got the best points per game in the Metropolitan Division. They've been that good from the start of the season to now. They've shown no signs of wavering. Ovechkin in or out of the lineup. And we've known for a couple of years now, he's not that guy anymore. He can't. His skating ability is not what it used to be. He's certainly not going to be the most formidable version of Alex Ovechkin we've ever seen. But having him back is another threat up front, and of course, it's bringing your leader back onto the ice into the locker room. So that's going to be good for the fans, for the players, and everything. And the fact that this team has been as stable as they've been with Dylan Strome running things up there with Connor McMichael having a breakout, Mangiapane keeping it down on the taxiing between the third and second lines. Like this is a really well-constructed roster that I and many others overlooked going into this season. Some people thought they would make a step up, certainly not this big of a step up. They've taken the Metropolitan Division away from the Rangers, Devils, and Hurricanes, and they've made it their own for the time being. So I have to keep biting my tongue, honestly, about how much I slept on this team. They've got three defensive pairings that you could play 20 plus minutes a game. They've got four lines that all have a specific purpose, and they all fulfill it pretty well. And they've got a great goaltending tandem in Charlie Lindgren and Logan Thompson, who Logan Thompson specifically has made it now a habit of being in a 1A, 1B type system for several years. And Charlie Lindgren really had a breakout last year and was expected to continue that. I've been really impressed with him. And I think that this team is even in the days after Ovechkin, is set up in such a way that they're going to continue to be successful. And I didn't expect that. I got to give them a lot of credit, on and off the ice.
Lou, do you have any concern because he's out for 5 weeks with a broken leg and the skating was already Ovechkin's issue? I mean that collision with Jack McBain, Utah was pretty brutal. Do you have any concern that hey, this might be the straw that breaks Ovi's leg?
Honestly, no, because this dude's just a warrior. I do think so. It was diagnosed as a fibia fracture, right?
Fibula,
So that's
yep.
a non, I think they call it a non-load-bearing bone. It's one that like he
You
was.
got him
He's been skating
bedridden.
for about a month. I don't think, and listen, you can go one of two ways. Ovechkin's strength hasn't been skating. It's also probably never been skating. So like he doesn't need to speed up and down the ice for Ovechkin to have an impact. And even if he's a little hobbled or not as mobile, like as long as he can still rip it, that's a massive plus for the Capitals. I had to double check this. Kind of couldn't believe my eyes. So he hasn't played since mid-November. He's second on the team in goals still. He's
Yeah.
fifth in points. He's got 15 goals and 25 points in 18 games.
That
So
shows how
back.
deep the team is. That's a deep team then.
Yes. Well, and listen, like I Right. No one, I think, expected the Caps to be this good, but I was very complimentary of their offseason moves. And I think the big one that maybe we don't need to give it love, but I think just talk about is like no one's talking about PLD, and that's probably a good thing. Because if we were talking about PLD, it would probably be, oh my God, this guy's a disaster. He's a problem once again. I don't think he's setting the world on fire. He's not really scoring at the rate you'd maybe hope, but I think he's been a solid addition. And again, when you have Dylan Strome playing at a 1C level, when you have McMichael taking a leap, when you have the blue line that's been reinforced, and Nick, you know how much we love Matt Roy on this pod. Like, I think this is it's a deep Capitals team, as you guys said, and I think they've really changed the narrative around this team in just one offseason, because last year they came into the playoffs and we said it's a joke that this team is in the playoffs. Look at the goal differential. They're not going anywhere. And when they attacked in the offseason, we went, what are they doing? I know they want to be competitive for Ovi, but you have to think about the future. It turns out they may not have been super off base to buy into this core. And again, I always thought that Dylan Strome was a good player. I did not think Connor McMichael was this good of a player. So props to this front office for not just trying to build a good enough squad around Ovi, but actually buying into some of the talent they had there and putting them in positions to succeed the way they have this year. I'm not going to go ahead and say that they're a lock to be top three in the Metro just yet, because I do think there's a lot that can unfold. But I think you have every reason to be high on this team at the Christmas break.
And go ahead, James.
Real quick, just Alexi Protas as well. Played almost the whole season last year and was a 30-point guy, had 6 goals, has been another surprise on this top line. Things have just started to work for this team. And I think Dylan Strome gets a lot of credit, and deservedly so, for being the glue on that first line, for putting things together. I mean, he's playing over a point per game right now. And adding
Career year for
Ovechkin,
sure.
yeah, and adding Ovechkin, who is over a point per game when he's been healthy this year. That's huge. And I think we go back to last year, and we thought Ovechkin, we're starting to see the signs of age, is at least that's what we thought. Having a whole offseason to prepare really helped him, obviously. But now this injury, I think it raises some of those questions. Can he come back in? I don't think he's playing tonight against Toronto. I don't think he's going to be able to match that same clip from the start of the season, at least not right now.
I
But
agree.
if they can get him back to that fully healthy, I think they got to watch out if you're going against this Capitals team.
I
Yeah,
don't
just.
think he can chase. I don't think that he will get Gretzky's record this year. I do think he can make it close, because when Ovi catches fire, even though he's like 39 now, like he still has that in him, and he did kind of catch fire at the end of last year and salvage some of those numbers. And again, he came out shot out of a cannon this year. Like, if Ovi gets on like a 20-25 game heater, so he needed 43 coming into the year to pass Gretzky. I think he gets 30 this year, no questions about it. And I think if he really gets in the heater, he can probably sneak around that 40 goal mark, and then all of a sudden, the last 10 games of the season, we're looking at it, and we're talking about it. It's a storyline. I think it will be a storyline at the end of the year.
To your point about the depth of this team, even though Ovi was still second in the team by the time he comes back, the Capitals are third in goals per game in the NHL. So that shows distribution's
I'll
crazy.
throw love to a player that I absolutely despise, but I do respect, and that's Tom Wilson. Again, I'm not a Tom Wilson fan. I'm a Ranger fan, and so those obviously go counterpart. Tom Wilson, I thought was a real letdown last year, and you look at some of his production stats the last couple of years. The big praise he always got was, yeah, he's a tough guy and he's an instigator, but when he's on the ice, like, he's really talented and he can score goals and he can create a little bit. He can be a top six forward. Well, he's kind of getting back to that. Like, I think he's got 13 goals. He's in maybe 24 points. Like, he's on pace to completely almost like double his numbers from last year. So I think when you look at last year, were the Capitals that good? No, I don't think so. I do think they had letdowns from a couple players that we probably, didn't look closely enough at and went like, hey, like Tom Wilson's better than a fringe 30-point player. This is he should be a 40, 50-point guy. You're seeing some of these guys get back to what they probably should be.
Absolutely. Capitals are going to be a force. Of course, Ovechkin, before he got hurt, 15 goals in 18 games. We'll see how he tries to continue that. He's at 868 right now, of course, chasing Gretzky's famed mark of 894. We'll see how that unfolds against Toronto tonight. Speaking of Toronto, last night they just beat the Detroit Red Wings, I believe 6-2. It was a bit of a schlacking. And the Red Wings were under the new coach, Todd McClellan, who it's his first time taking the helm of a team in the middle of a season. He's never done that before. It's an interesting move for the Red Wings. Of course, Todd McClellan has only ever been in the Pacific Division. He was the San Jose Sharks coach, Edmonton Oilers, and then the Los Angeles Kings, of course. His all-time record is 598, 412, and 134. He's coached 1,144 regular season games. He's sixth among active coaches in wins behind Paul Maurice, Lindy Ruff, Peter Laviolette, Tortorella, and Pete DeBoer. So he's in some pretty elite company there as far as coaches go, but how much of that is just a factor of being in the league for a long time? It's Todd McClellan is interesting because he's known for his, I mean, trap defensive style of hockey, whatever you want to call it, but that's not the message he came into Detroit with. Which I think is the right thing to do. He recognized the fact that, hey, this is my first time coming into a team in the middle of the season. He says he's not going to try and change, tactics yet, formations. He says what we've asked to do is ask the players to play harder, play faster, and a little bit smarter. Those are three simple things I think we can control without any type of tactics or systematic structure play. And the last thing is the spirit of the team has to improve. When something like this happens, the spirit of the team is at a low. We're going to work hard to build that back up. That's great, Todd. How? Like, what? I get you need to say something, but there is something fundamentally wrong with this Red Wings team, and I don't know if a trap defense is going to fix that.
For me, the biggest concern is, all right, I never thought Detroit was going to be great defensively. And you look at their goaltending and you go, all right, that's probably not a goalie tandem that's going to save you games consistently. But you look at that team and you go, it has the offensive firepower that it should be able to score goals. And right now, I think they are third worst in the NHL in goals per game. A team that has Dylan Larkin and Alex DeBrincat, and even if it's an aging Patrick Kane, a Patrick Kane that found success in Detroit's system the last couple of years, like this is not a team. And I was like, one of my favorite players, an up-and-coming star in Lucas Raymond, this is not a team that should be struggling to put the puck in the net. And so I'm not surprised that Detroit says, all right, we're done with Gru, we're done with Derek Lalonde, and we're going to move in a different direction. McClellan's an interesting one because, again, I don't know if, that trap style of defense, I don't know if that's necessarily going to translate to a boost in offensive production. Listen, the Wings need to get better defensively, but they need to figure out how to put the puck in the net again, and they have the talent that should not be something we're talking about in late December.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. What I will say is I'll direct the conversation somewhere else, and I look in goal. When someone not named Cam Talbot plays in goal for the Detroit Red Wings, they are so much worse. His numbers are, and part of the reason I know this is because I'm a Cam Talbot truther, and I always get him in fantasy hockey because he's a great third goalie to have. Shout out,
I love it.
old Rangers fans, old Flyers fans. He's been all everywhere pretty much. Old Kings fans too, Nick Palmer.
With
I
Todd
got you too.
McClellan.
With Todd McClellan, this is, and I think that's important too for stability, for familiarity with a goaltender. And Cam Talbot's not a young goaltender anymore. He's been around the league for a while now. He's been everywhere, and he continues to be a stable force. The guy who's bounced around from a lot of teams generally doesn't just find a home and be this good. One of the best goals saved above expected numbers in the National Hockey League. But Alex Lyon, not so, and Ville Husso, who's had to play in a caretaker role as a third goaltender, also -5.9 goal saved above expected. That's a massive swing in terms of efficacy from your goaltenders. He's the only Detroit Red Wings goaltender with a plus 900 save percentage, and it shows when they play. And I agree with you, Lou. Just to go back to that, outside of Lucas Raymond, I'm not seeing. And I guess you could make a case for Larkin as well. I'm not seeing points production to the level where they should be. Alex DeBrincat, I mean, that first line last year, it's all we talked about, right?
Yeah.
This Red Wings team, they blew everybody's expectations out of the water in terms of how good they were. Maybe it was a fluke, but I mean, I certainly think that they have the ability and quality in this team to challenge in the Atlantic Division. And it's a vulnerable Atlantic Division, if we're being honest. It's one that's shaken up. The Bruins had a slow start to the season. They didn't look quite like the same team they were in the past few years, although they've brought it back a little bit. The Lightning have found a way to sneak back into this discussion. And it's really the Panthers and Leafs who are alone at the top of the top in this division. And if I might say, with the Metropolitan being a little bit underwhelming outside of the Devils, Hurricanes, and Capitals, the wild cards are up for grabs. This Red Wings team should be challenging for a wild card. I think Lalonde, it had to go. I think some of the quotes were pretty damning in the press conference that followed. Dylan Larkin said something needed to happen. And if the captain is saying that, I mean, I think that there's something brewing under the surface that really wasn't working for chemistry or whatever it is. But I'm looking at the names on this roster, and there's some moves here and there that I would maybe criticize Yzerman for, bringing in Tarasenko and Kane. And while those guys obviously still have quality there, I mean, I think we saw what that experiment did in New York. It wasn't exactly the recipe for success. And that's not to say that this is now dump on the Rangers, dump on Chris Drury. There's plenty of that going on outside of this show. What I'm saying is this is now found a blueprint that wasn't necessarily successful. You've got Moritz Seider, who's on 19 points, and you really want him to be more than that. You want him to be taking another leap. You want him to start getting into those Quinn Hughes, Cale Makar conversations. I know it's early for that, but I think we haven't seen enough from a young defenseman as talented as him. Same with Edvinsson as well, and guys like Rasmussen, Veleno, and Compher haven't, and Andrew Kopp as well, haven't taken the steps
Dude,
you would want them to take in the middle six here. So I think there's a Jeff Petrie as
Jeff
well. That's
Petrie.
a seasoned guy that you want to be on more than 6 points, better than a -7. They have to figure something out. I think the firing was probably the right move. And shout out to my cousin Luke, who plays for Little Caesars in Detroit,
Nice.
who's teammates with Lalonde's kid. I hope things are still going well over there. I had just seen him, and they were just talking about like, I think it's possible that they might be on the way out. Don't want to see it happen, but it did come to fruition in the following day. So I hope everything is going well. Feel for them, but I think from the Red Wings' perspective, it's a move that had to be made.
I would,
Little Caesars is gross, dude.
yeah,
Little
no,
Caesars
he's,
is a good team.
yeah, he's a pretty. He, watch out for him. He's gonna make some big sound one day. Luke Savage.
All right, good stuff. I would like to kind of follow up on that, the Iser plan. Does anyone else kind of feel like they maybe rushed trying to become contenders and it's kind of screwed them up here? Because, and I'm probably of the people that we have in this pod circulation, it's maybe me and Jack that I feel like are usually the kindest to the Red Wings. Like, I love their forward group. I think I pick them to be in the playoffs at the beginning of this year, but you can go back and listen to the shows we've done at the beginning of the seasons the last 2 years now, and most of the pod, especially you guys, I think have been a little skeptical that Detroit would put it together and actually make a playoff push, and obviously they got close last year. But like, you look at some of the contracts that they gave out when they tried to make this leap into fringe wildcard team, maybe third team in the Atlantic. Like that Andrew Kopp deal, even as he was coming off of that Rangers postseason, even Ranger fans went, ooh, that's a big number.
Yeah.
The JT Compher deal, I'm not sure. I mean, I know 5 million a year is going to get less and less as the cap continues to rise. That's a lot for a guy that to me is producing at basically a half point per game. The Jeff Petrie one, I'll go, listen, he had played really well up until his free agent year, even though he was aging. Like, you hoped maybe that he was just going to age gracefully. It looks like he just, sometimes it happens. You sign a guy, he falls completely off the cliff. And then even you brought up the Kane, the Tarasenko. It's like, all right, they tried to bolster this team to get to a level based on offensive production where they could compete in the Atlantic and could push for the postseason. And somewhere along the way, they're now they're kind of in cap hell, and they don't really have the freedom to navigate the way they like, and they're stuck with all these contracts with players that are nice but not good or great, and it's going to be tough to move those players.
It's going to be tough, but I mean, this team hasn't made the playoffs since 2016. So I'm not sure I'd necessarily say that they rushed a rebuild. If anything, the rebuild went awry, I would say.
So maybe it's not rushing, maybe it's just they put the money in the wrong spots. Like if they had a redo, are they giving that contract to Kopp? Are they giving that contract to Compher? I feel like they're not.
If you have a redo, you're keeping Ryan O'Reilly, that's for sure.
I think I love that we have this conversation right after we talk about the Capitals because, quite frankly, those teams were borderline identical in terms of quality last year. One happened to sneak into the playoffs and get absolutely walloped, and the other one didn't, but very well could have. Like this, like the Red Wings could have had the honor of getting swept by the Rangers in the first round last year.
I was more scared of the Wings going in than I was of the Capitals. I think the Wings had played the Rangers interesting that season. The Wings had had stretches last year where I went like, this team is fun. Like they legitimately did have fun stretches. They really haven't this season. Like I like the top group of this core. I love Dylan Larkin. I love DeBrincat. Again, like Lucas Raymond is going to become like a perennial 40 goal scorer in this league. Like there, and I know, Mo Sider, it's maybe hasn't shot up among young defensemen the way you'd hope, but like there's talent to buy into with this core. And listen, there definitely was a world where Patrick Kane and Vlad Tarasenko are the aging veteran goal scorers that this team needed just to get that little extra oomph. And so listen, it's 100%, Monday morning quarterback here. But obviously, I think now we're starting to see Detroit fans on Twitter. I think they're going a little old of the Iser plan. And I feel bad. I really think great franchise players should not go into managerial roles with the team that they're associated with. Because, like, thank God Derek Jeter did not take the job he got with the Yankees instead of the Marlins, because there's not a world where I want to have to feel conflicted about Derek Jeter. I'm sure there are a lot of Red Wings fans that, I mean, they thank God every day that Steve Yzerman was a Red Wing and brought that team to greatness in the 90s and early 2000s. I'm sure there are Red Wings fans that are not super thrilled with Steve Yzerman right now, and that's just not a spot I would ever want to be in as a fan.
And it feels that same way with Rob Blake in LA a little bit right now,
Yes, it's a great
for
day,
sure.
Tom.
Talking about a team that is not doing poorly, that's a terrible transition, but the Devils are playing great hockey. The Devils are doing fantastic. They've won, I think, what, five straight at home, James? They've
That's
finally
correct.
taken their road successes back at home. This is also one of, I don't know if I like it or if I hate it, but they just played in Carolina and they won 4-2, and now they're playing Carolina in New Jersey, or did I flip it around?
Back where they were in Jersey last night, they were wearing
Okay.
black, so it's not always clear. They were in Jersey last night. They're going to be in Carolina tonight. Home and homes are fun. It's a little weird when you gotta take like a 2 hour flight to do a home and home instead of just like, a ride to
Yeah.
Long Island, which like the Devils and Islanders always used to do Friday, Saturday home and homes. But they're a little more rare these days. The Hurricanes Devils has been a fun rivalry in the mid 2000s, and it's recaptured that again. The Devils were not the better team for most of last night, though. And I think that speaks to something we saw in, when the Devils found success a couple years ago. Where they would get outshot in a lot of those games, and then they would fly together in the third period and figure out how to win. This felt a little bit more like that. Jacob Markstrom was big once again. He didn't have another 12 save shutout, but he faced 31 shots, finally got some action and stopped 29. A good game from him, but the Devils being able to score in bunches, I think really helped this game out. They scored the equalizer and then the go-ahead goal to make it 2-1, bang after the other in less than a minute, and then the same thing with the third and fourth really put it together late. So I mean, what we've been saying about the Devils continues. some unlikely contributors and guys like Stefan Mason and Jonathan Kovacevic have really stepped it up. Andre Palat even turned a corner and is starting to pitch in. And then you're always going to get what you get from Hughes, Bratt, Kiechier. Luke Hughes hit turned a corner and has had 6
That was
points in his
nice.
last 8 games. Scored
Yeah.
a great goal, assisted Jack Hughes against the Rangers in their final game before the break. So there's been a lot to like, but mostly I want to hone in on the defense. While it didn't shine in terms of limiting the shots against Carolina, it did limit some of the high danger chances that we saw in that 7-game run where they limited their teams to 20 or fewer shots. No one in NHL history had ever done that before, or at least since they started collecting shots figures in the late 50s, early 60s, I think it was, in the NHL. And this is a team that was just god awful defensively just a year ago. They shed some of the fat in terms of the players, but I mean, think about like a guy like John Marino that they got rid of. John Marino was an excellent defensive defenseman just 2 seasons ago. I think it's just about finding the right players to fit together. You got a healthy Jonas Siegenthaler. You pair him next to Jonathan Kovacevic. That's arguably the best shutdown line in the league. And then you've got Brendan Dillon playing next to Dougie Hamilton. Instead of forcing Siegenthaler to play with someone so offensive, you've got a couple guys with a cannon, a couple guys who can play physical, who can cover some space without skating too much. It's a good pairing. That one gets victimized the most defensively. Of course, it does. Dougie Hamilton's a fourth forward, but that's just the way it works. And then Brett Pesce has molded Luke Hughes into this fantastic two-way defenseman now. And now that Luke Hughes has figured that part of his game out, he started to score some of the points again. It's been really fun to watch. I still think that there's, probably going to have to bring in one more high-scoring winger if they really want to set themselves apart in the Eastern Conference. And I think there's some tinkering to do with the bottom six as well, because guys like Dawson Mercer, while he did score, has 2 goals in his last 2 games now, I still think needs to hit another level. I think he's getting there. Paul Cotter started the season flying out of the gates, but he's kind of slowed up a little bit. I think there maybe needs to be one more third, fourth line center to really help these guys out in order to fill out what is a pretty deep team altogether. But yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of fun to watch lately, and this is a big 8-point swing now from last night and tonight. If they can take another win on the road against Carolina, it's going to be Jake Allen in goal for New Jersey, who's been pretty good, not as good as Markstrom, especially not as of late. He had, I think Markstrom's got 11 goals conceded in his last 10 starts, which is phenomenal. That's really good. Hasn't faced a whole lot of shots because of the way the Devils have been defending, but I mean, that's kind of the recipe for having a star goaltender. I mean, Martin Brodeur might be the greatest goaltender of all time. He did have 3 Hall of Fame defensemen in front of him for the majority of his career. I mean, he still did go to a cup in 2012 with Marek Sedlicki and Peter Harold in front of him, but I digress. I mean, this defensive structure is really the gold standard for this Devils team, and having guys like Jesper Bratt, Jack Hughes, Nico Hischier, and Stefan Mason playing the way that they have in front of them, and Timo Meier, can't forget about him, has been a treat to watch, and boy, has it been long overdue for Devils fans. I mean, last night it was over $100 to get into the door to the Prudential Center. I mean, a winner break game has not costed that much money in a long, long time to
Wow.
see the Devils at home. So it's been a real pleasure, and I've waited very long, and I'm very grateful to WFUV and Bobby Chaffardini
Wow.
to be able to cover this team in an era like this. It's been a long time coming.
Well, James, I'll say no one on this pod is gonna diminish what Markstrom is doing just 'cause he's getting good defense in front of him, 'cause that's been the talking point on 5-on-3 ever since we were freshmen. Is, man, it'd be awesome if Devils goaltenders could just get a little more help in front of them defensively. You
True.
finally got it. That was one of the big talking points for us all off season, was let's see if Dillon and Pesce helps mold some of the younger guys around them and gets this defense back on track. That's exactly what happened. Did you see, like, Jay Fresh highlighted Luke Hughes the other day? He had a little card for him. I think he said that you could argue Pesce and Hughes are the best two-way D pairing in the league. Like, that's awesome, man. Like, that is it's cool to see Luke Hughes finally take that leap where he's
Yes.
a little bit more balanced on both sides, because I think everyone expected he's got all the intangibles to be a dominant offensive defenseman, but you need to see a little bit more on the back end. It's cool that he's getting comfortable on both sides of the ice now.
That was going to be my point, is from the outside in the eye test, is Luke Hughes in that last game and in the last couple of games seems to be taking steps in his confidence, especially with skating. I think skating has been, at least from what I've seen and watching the Devils, a little less sure on his feet. And I think his passing, especially in the Carolina game, was beautiful. That goal and assist went a long way. What have you seen progression-wise, James, from Luke Hughes? Because in the first couple weeks, he looked like one of the bigger issues for this Devils team to me.
Yeah, I think that's totally it was certainly an issue in terms of the production because, like Lou said, all the qualities were there, right? I mean, his skating ability, his edge work, speed, tenacity, his ability stick handling with the puck, his shot pretty wicked. Like this guy has everything you would want in a 1D offensive defenseman. But last year he played his full NHL season, and I think a lot of people pointed out that there was discipline issues, bad changes, getting caught in the corners, getting caught behind the net, things like that. And these are common growing pains for a young defenseman. And I think people are mostly surprised by how quickly he was able to figure it out this season. He missed the first 6 or 7 weeks of the season, I think, with that shoulder injury. And what that allowed him to do was to really, really settle in. And while it was a struggle for that first 2 weeks following that, once he really started to settle down with Pesci next to him, I think he realized that these are the sort of things that he needs to adapt into his game. And then once he finally became grounded in that, it became about how can I then use this now extra blanket of security that I've developed myself and with my D partner and add more points again. And he's been taking more risk. He's been flying higher up the ice. I mean, you saw in that goal, he ends up alone in the slot on that one. In terms of the goal, he assisted to Jack against the Rangers. He's down low on the far circle and backhands it across. Like these are plays that you don't always see a defenseman making in the offensive zone. And that's not to say that he's sacrificed his defensive play at all. He's still been as strong as he was once he turned that corner around mid-November, early November. So there's been a lot to like about Luke Hughes's game. I think specifically what it came down to was just embracing the defense of it all. And I know that sounds silly, but the disciplinary errors are not happening anymore. You know, we're not seeing him take a bad change on a stretch pass. We're not seeing him get lost floating on the blue line and then getting Brett Pesce stuck into some bad 2-on-1s. The Devils are a rush team, so that does happen sometimes, but rarely ever am I looking at it and saying that was because Luke Hughes did this, that, or the other. It's often just a team breakdown if something like that does happen. I've been wildly impressed with Luke. I think, I mean, he's even stepped up and been the quarterback for the power play one over Dougie Hamilton at moments. They've kind of switched the responsibility there, and I mean, he's just been one of the best, well-rounded defensemen across the league. Again, like it feels like a privilege to be able to watch a Devils team like this, and the fact that they've been able to make all these defensive records and the Niedermeyer, Stevens, Danico, Rafalski, Albelin era, Colin White, Devils teams didn't necessarily do these things is shocking to me. Absolutely shocking. And I'm completely entrenched in what has been the best defensive Devils team of my lifetime. And honestly, it's gotten to the point where I'm starting to question, are they even better than the Devils team from 2 years ago? They might not get the same amount of points, but I think they play a better brand of hockey. Certainly one that'll be more conducive to playoff success, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I mean, you want to talk about a good defensive effort. I mean, that Monday game against the Rangers, that 5-0 win was certainly a masterclass on all fronts. But speaking of the Rangers, they have struggled. That's one way to put it. But the break is over. They've lost 13 of their last 17. That's not great. But they are, I think, maybe feeling healthier after the break. Keandre Miller was activated off injured reserve on Friday. He'll be back in the lineup. Chris Kreider, I believe, is also expected to play after he was a healthy scratch in Monday against the Devils. So those are two big pieces for the Rangers. Lou, it's tough to pinpoint a place to start. So I think I want to just say what should be the Rangers' mentality going into the second half of the season? What needs to change? Has anything changed? do you think?
I'm gonna quote directly from the intro to the MSG Rangers affiliate broadcast of the Devils game, where Sam Rosen said, "What do you look for first, Joe?" And Joe Micheletti said, "Well, effort, first of all." That's basically where we're at. This team knows the situation. You're basically fighting for, all right, how much of this core do you want to see still here next year? Because however bad this bottoms out is going to determine how bad the fallout is. Because, so you've already seen Trouba get traded, Kako get traded. I think Riley Smith is probably a lock to get traded. Anyone on this team doesn't have a major long-term investment in, I think is subject to go. That could even mean my dearly beloved Jimmy Vesey. If they feel like that they don't need him at a certain point. I think this team has to decide whether or not they still would like to be teammates with Chris Kreider. And Chris Kreider has a big say in that as well, because I tell you what, this was really jarring to me. I don't know if you guys are huge like charts people, but there is Evolving Hockey does the really good. They do the offensive percentile, defensive percentile, overall percentile. And it's all, I think it's based on GAR and expected GAR. Mika Zibanejad is bottom 1% defensively. Vincent Trocheck's bottom 5%. Chris Kreider's bottom 17%. And those are, I would say, they should be three of your top five defensive players on the team. And they've been three of the worst so far this season. And I think Trocheck probably flies under the radar because all the hate's going to go to Mika Zibanejad, and it's been earned and deserved this year. This team is just, they're a mess right now, and there are these really tough quotes from Trocheck and Lindgren after the Devils game, essentially saying, "Yeah, we know that we're not playing with the level of effort that we need to play with, and I don't know why." And that's just a bad place to be. And when the players are talking about that they're not playing hard enough and they don't know how to change that, every press conference, every post-game presser looks like a funeral. And that's exactly how every game starts to feel. This team goes down, and they can't take a punch. They go down a goal, and it's basically over. So I don't really know. They're 5 points out of a wild card right now, and they keep flashing the stat up about, 80% of the teams that are in the playoff picture around Thanksgiving, around Christmas. It doesn't change all that much. And this Ranger team has not shown you a lot of promise that they can change this absolute fall from grace. But I still think they have a chance to. Out of all the teams that are in last place in any of the divisions, the Rangers by far have the most talent. There was not a day that went by that I thought, or going in, there was not a day this offseason where I thought for a second that the Rangers would spend significant time last place in the Metro. But here we are, and this is, I think, going to be a really damaging stretch for them, because even if they do manage to turn this around, if you're Chris Drury, how do you have confidence in this core? I don't know what this core can do to actually regain confidence and make you think that they can make a playoff run of any significance. That's kind of where I'm at right now.
And James, the proof is in the pudding there that it is not a talent issue. I think we saw that in that Devils game where we saw the too many men. But you see the frustration getting this team, and it causes mental errors. James, if the Rangers want to turn this around, they got to do it now, because 8 of their 9 games coming out of the break are against teams currently in a playoff position. They're playing the Capitals, the Devils, the Golden Knights, and the Panthers all in that stretch. Tankathon, which I love that website so much, because it tells you about strength of schedule. The Rangers have the second hardest strength of schedule in the league. It's got to happen, James. It's got to happen now. And if not, I mean, does Laviolette, is he going to be the head coach at the end of the season?
Well, I mean, that's a bigger question. I think we can go back to last offseason. How many Rangers fans were pumped about Peter Laviolette becoming the head coach? It was very few, at least as far as I can remember, Lou, you can correct me on that if
No,
I'm wrong.
everyone, the key phrase that kept getting thrown out was lateral move. And that
Right.
was talking about from Gerard Gallant, who I personally do not think is a good NHL coach.
And I mean,
Right.
I don't mean to rub salt in the wounds, but Chris Knobloch was literally the AHL affiliate's head coach, and I mean, he helped bring a team to a Stanley Cup final. What I think is, at the end of this stretch, these 9 games, I think it goes to January 14th, where they play on the road. They ended on the road against Vegas and Colorado. That's really tough. I think at the end of this stretch, we're going to learn everything we need to know about the Rangers for this season. If they can come away, they play the Blackhawks and a bunch of really good teams in this stretch. If they can come away out of a possible 18 points with more than 10, 11, or 12, I think there's a reasonable expectation that they are within fighting distance to claw back into the playoffs. This team is obviously good enough. They have the best goaltender in the world, in my opinion. And I think most people in the hockey world would agree with that. We can argue about how much money the goaltender position should be worth, but if anybody's going to be worth the most, it should probably be that guy. And quite frankly, there are vulnerable teams in front of them. I think the Bruins at home on January 2nd, that's a game that you got to circle. That must be 2 points. Blackhawks on the road must be 2 points. Stars at home must be 2 points. And then I think the Devils at home, the game where potentially Matt Rempe comes back from suspension. I mean, that's as emotional as a game can get, really, at this point of the season. I think you've got to be circling that one as this is the retribution game. I wouldn't, put all the chips in the basket that if they don't win some of these games, it's all over. But the fact of the matter is, there's a chance now that they get out of this stretch, bruised but not battered, bent but not broken. Then there's enough momentum out of that where they say, all right, let's go. Let's sneak into a wild card. Let's get something out of this season. Let's finish third in the Metropolitan. Let's fight for something. This team is obviously good enough for that. However, out of the stretch, it's also very realistic that they get beaten up by the Florida teams, that they can't figure it out against Washington, that the Devils beat them again, that Vegas, excuse me, and Colorado take care of them, that road trip ends in Utah on a bad note, perhaps. That it could be the end of a long-term project where guys really start to go. I think the Chris Kreider healthy scratch on Monday was a surprise. I mean, the roster freeze was in effect with the holidays, so it didn't suggest that a move would be imminent, but it did suggest that something with, I mean, your star power forward who's, capable of scoring 50 goals. If he's getting a healthy scratch, what does that say for the culture in the locker room? What does that say for his ability to contribute? I think he's only got what, 11 goals, one assist on the year to this point, something or other like that. It's got to be now. You're right, Nick. It absolutely does have to be now if they want to figure it out. But I think that what they might have to do in this stretch doesn't have to be they have to win out, right? I think they just have to survive this and then make a push, because after that, if they get out of Colorado, they've got Utah, Columbus, Montreal, Ottawa, and then Philly. That's five in a row. You could win all five of those. That's 10 points if you want it. I mean, the Senators are a decent team, but I don't know. I think that there's enough legs on this Rangers team to survive to salvage something out of this season.
I don't know. They got to start playing a lot better to even start like circling certain games as wins. Because you all saw the stat. They lost to the worst team in the NHL twice in the span of 2 weeks. And an interesting line there about you can exit this bent but not broken. Part of me fears that they might already be broken and that they could make the playoffs. Maybe they could sneak into the playoffs and I think still ultimately be broken. I think there are wounds here that cannot be healed. The fact that we got, I would maybe call it an expose from Vince Mercogliano about all the stuff that's been going on behind the scenes, about the Rangers were upset with how the departure of Jim Ramsey has been held. We got all those nuggets about the social team isn't allowed to travel with them for games anymore. For the last couple of years, this team doesn't trust Chris Drury in terms of I think how he values them as people and some of the ruthlessness of which he's made some of his moves. That's not an article that usually comes out prior to mass change not happening. Like, that's usually the article you get once you've already traded Chris Kreider and Laviolette's been fired, or you fire Drury, and then you find out everything that happened behind the scenes. Like, we still don't even really know all that much about the Gerard Gallant fallout. We know he had a fight with Drury in the postseason. We knew that he didn't get along with Panarin and Kako and Lafreniere. We know he didn't really do a ton of practice. But, like, there's still a lot about Gerard Gallant that we don't know. And while Laviolette and Drury are here, we got this expose on the Rangers organization and how the locker room feels. Like, to me, that's very telling about where things are at right now, where morale is at. And again, all you have to do is look at the post-game pressers to see where morale is at in that locker room. And so I think there are wounds that even winning maybe can't heal, because I think if Mika Zibanejad doesn't turn his season around, there's still a way the Rangers get better. It's Alexis Lafreniere playing up to the standard that he played at last year in the postseason and to start this season. It's Panarin getting closer to that point per game pace that we're familiar with. It's Vincent Trocheck getting back to being really this team's number one center. That's what he's supposed to be. That's the time on ice that he's getting at this stage. It's Chris Kreider getting more consistent. Again, I think Zibanejad gets the brunt of the hate. And it's interesting with the Kreider stuff, because the healthy scratch, that's a very, very bold thing to do with your longest tenured Ranger, a guy that's beloved in that locker room. And let's not forget, this entire slide started when Drury's memo about putting Kreider on the trade block really got out. That's when this thing really took a tumble. To some extent, I credit Laviolette for at least trying stuff and trying to get a spark out of this team. I know people are saying that they want him to scratch Mika. I wonder if we'll ever get that, because he did just take him off of power play one against the Devils. The Rangers don't have a ton of center depth. Kaapo Kakko was playing center not too long ago, before Hedl came back from injury. So I don't know if they have the center depth necessarily to scratch Zibanejad, but that would be the last, like, wake-up call move, is scratching Mika. There's a lot of very, very ugly stuff right now happening in that room, that it's feeling more and more like Chris Kreider might not finish his career with the Rangers. And that's really going to sting, because as much as he has ownership in that, and Ranger fans have been critical about he's not always consistent at 5v5, and he really, ever since a couple of his injuries, he's not playing physical. He's not the same player that ended Carey Price's career. So Kreider certainly has some say in this, but he's certainly not the only one. The team around him has floundered. And if this core gets broken up, I think the players are going to have to look themselves in the mirror and go, I mean, yeah, we let ourselves down, we let our teammates down. That is going to be the story of this Rangers team if there's wholesale change.
I think a big reason why a lot of the finger pointing goes to Zibanejad is that he's stuck with the Rangers for a long time. You know, he has that NMC. I think he has a buyout proof contract as well that goes to 2030. So, you know, when you have 7 points over your last 17 games, you're looking at minus 14. That's tough, because it will hinge on Zibanejad.
And again, and it's the defense and the effort. Like, Zibanejad's not skating hard right now. And really, the only time the Rangers look good defensively is on the penalty kill. The penalty kill is honestly when they play their best hockey, almost on both sides. But for Mika to be that bad defensively, and again, I think Mika hides a lot. Lafreniere is slumping. Trocheck's playing some of the worst hockey he's probably played in the last 5, 6 years. So, like, there are big time issues with this team that Will Cooley, despite Lydia's best efforts, Will Cooley's not enough. Naming Will Cooley captain is not going to save this team. I wish it did.
No,
I wish it could.
it might not. And J James, you that it's weird. You said best goalie in the NHL, and then you didn't say Connor Hellebuyck. That's really funny.
No.
Anyway, dude, Hellebuyck stats this year are
No,
crazy.
Hellebuck's numbers are the best, and were the best last year as well.
Yeah, but listen, he doesn't have to deal with Stan Fischler bullying him online every day. You have to take the mental
Piggy
game.
Iggy. Piggy
I
Iggy.
hate him.
All right. Anyway, let's finish it up on Long Island. By the way, the Rangers play the Tampa Bay Lightning this evening, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time. The New York Islanders are I'm gonna put it like this. They're just as down bad as the New York Rangers, man. I mean, this team is not having a good time. Especially right before the break, a stinker 7-1 to the Buffalo Sabres, snapping their 13-game losing streak. That one, I tweeted this after. I said if the Islanders don't make the playoffs, this was the game that ended it all. But you look at it through rose-tinted glasses, and you say, "Look, you have a home against Pittsburgh that starts today, and you play in Pittsburgh tomorrow. You win both of those games, you're 1 point behind them, and they're one. Oh no, you're even with Pittsburgh, and they're 1 point behind the wild card. So if I'm not willing to count either the Rangers or the Islanders out, because realistically, they're 5 points out of a wild card spot. So, you know, before people call the season, it's not like that at all." Look, no one's playing as advertised. I think Noah Dobson specifically has struggled a lot. He's I don't know how he's losing value. It's remarkable to me. Patrick Waugh, he was looked at to be the answer for this team. I don't know if he is. I do like his energy. He says, "Hey, we have a chance to get closer to Pittsburgh by winning this game." But what I liked more is our fans deserve a good performance from us. We have to bounce back, play a strong game. They deserve that. And I think that he's forging a really good relationship with the Islanders fans. And I think most of the hate now is going to Lou Lamoriello, which you make the argument. I think you can do it. You look at the Pierre Engvall contract, where he's a healthy scratch most games. Like, it's really, really not good, some of these contracts. Ilya Sorokin hasn't been the goaltender he needs to be. The last couple games, even the last couple weeks, Semyon Varlamov's on the LTIR. So we'll be looking at Hoberg, I believe, for one of the two Pittsburgh's games. So that'll be an interesting look, because Sorokin did play 11 games in a row, which is the most he's done in his career. So I don't blame him necessarily for having a couple lapses in his games.
Absolutely.
But there's flashes. There's flashes. I think to that game against Toronto, that was absolutely dominant last week. They have the ability. Pittsburgh is 4-1-1 in their last six games. They're beatable, though. But I think Stephen Rosner put it pretty well. There's no such thing as moral victories anymore for a team that's used all of them up. And that's just how it goes. I'd like to know what you guys think. Matt Barzal hasn't had the production that he's needed to have this year. And to me, I don't want to call the team stale, but is the team stale?
Well, Nick, I think we've kind of been expecting a season like this to come out of this Islanders team for a little while. They've punched above their weight pretty regularly, with the exception of, I guess it was 3 seasons ago, where they were just unbelievably injured and so depleted, and you didn't blame them for anything. You were just like, all right, get through the season. We'll talk next year at UBS. And that was kind of the story. Now, what's kind of happened is the idea about the character. Like, you can't have so many moral victories after you've already had so many. You know, I think that's a great quote, and it's a good way to put it. The fact is, if I can offer that same sense to the Rangers, where, you know, this is a vulnerable wild card race for either Metro or Atlantic teams. My message would to be to, would be to urge the Islanders fans that they're not out of it. I think Patrick Waugh having that fan-centered, you know, scope on how the team works is one that is, you know, very, very easy to like from the outside in. But I think it's one that even players in the locker room can appreciate, because when you start to feel like you're playing for something bigger than yourself, maybe that's when your team starts punching above its weight. And the Islanders fan base is always been so passionate and so dedicated, and I mean, since the 80s, what that fan base has gone through has been pretty remarkable, and they've stuck through it, and they've had some good moments in the late 2010s and some not so great moments, and I think this year is it's coming to fruition what we thought was the scope of this roster, and that the quality just isn't as good as the teams around them, and I think, I mean, you can't blame Patrick Waugh for that. I think you absolutely rightfully so. have to look at the front office and Lou Lamoriello for what's happened there. And that's coming from someone who absolutely loves Lou Lamoriello. I mentioned this on the show last week with Lydia and Grace that I actually wrote a letter to him when he was the GM of the Devils, and he responded. So I mean, that was pretty cool that he did that, and he helped bring a few Stanley Cups as well. So he's obviously, like, his time when he was a great executive in the NHL was as good as it gets. But I think he's past his time now, unfortunately. I think it's ridiculous to hear some of the noise outside of New York towards the Islanders, like Sean Avery saying the Rangers got to find a way to get Matt Barzal. Like, that's, I don't know if any of you guys heard that. Sean Avery
I didn't
actually,
hear that.
I don't know if it was a fake tweet and I'm getting baited, but I'm pretty sure Sean Avery did say that. I don't know. I
Sean
don't know what
Avery
you.
says a lot of crazy stuff. That doesn't surprise me at all.
He's not necessarily the best example of that sort of discourse going around. But I mean, this outside of these top two lines, I mean, can you point at this New York Islanders team and really say that these guys have what it takes to be a playoff team? And honestly, the answer could kind of be yes. I mean, they're not necessarily better than the Hurricanes or Devils or as good as this Capitals team is playing, but they have a opportunity. There's a window for them to sneak in. Do I think they're going to do it? No. And I think that this team is going to look a lot different in the next few seasons, honestly. I think by the deadline, this team is going to look quite different as well. And as for Sorokin, I agree with the point you made, Nick. If Varlamov is healthy and he's behind Sorokin doesn't have to play as many minutes, isn't put in as many difficult scenarios, and his numbers look better. Sorokin is still a fantastic goaltender, and I think to look at him and say he needs to be better is really not the proper takeaway from this. I don't know. I still feel like they haven't lost their identity, right? I mean, I know they did get smacked around by the Sabres of all teams, but when they're in games, they're in games. They're fighting for every inch. They really do play that. All lines have the identity of a fourth line. I don't think they've lost that necessarily. I just think it's finally caught up with them that the quality just might not be what it needs to be. And when guys are underperforming, guys aren't scoring points where you need them to, I don't know where you turn to on this roster to say, all right, if it's not going to come from if it's not going to come from Palmieri, or I mean, on Palmieri's got 25 points. I don't even know why I said him. But if it's not going to come from other guys, if Noah Dobson's going to take a step back, who do you turn to and say, these are where we need the points? I'm not sure that this team has that type of scope in the roster where you can say, all right, if our top guys aren't going, we got these guys. I just don't see it.
They don't score enough goals. That's the bottom line, is the team doesn't score enough goals. But even more than that, I mean, they are fifth worst in the NHL in goals per game, just ahead of Chicago, Detroit, Nashville, and Anaheim. So
It's not good
they're not
company.
putting the puck in the back of the net. That's not good company. And it's even worse. I mean, not even worse. Anders Lee is having a great year, but he cannot be your leading goal scorer. It's just, it's not 4 years ago, unfortunately. I'd like to see, even though Bo Horvat, his identity is a 200-foot player, and I think that he's exemplified that. It's the goal scoring. I think you're right. I think Brock Nelson might not be an Islander at the end of the year. That's definitely possible.
It's painful.
It's painful because he's been so consistent. JG Pageau, maybe not. He's had a tough year. You'd like to see Matt Barzal after the injury. You'd like to see, man, when they signed Duclair, I said if Duclair is healthy, he'll be helpful. He was not healthy. Big whiff from Lou Lamoriello there. When, by the way, when he wrote you back, he what did he use, like a telegram or something? I don't.
So that's very funny. It was actually, I made a letter saying what I think the lines should be for the Devils in that coming season. And he sent, it was like typed out on a computer. It was
Well,
like,
there you
I
go.
just want, he was just like, I just want you to know that this wasn't just put aside. Like, we genuinely considered what you put in the letter.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, you better. Why would you separate Eliash and Kovalchuk? You want them on the same line. And I mean, they played Zajac with Kovalchuk for most of that season anyway. But I mean, I digress. It was still very cool that he wrote back.
Yeah, that is really cool. What's not so cool is the 200-foot play of Simon Holmstrom. That hasn't been great. Look, he has a wicked shot. Unfortunately, he can't create the space that he needs, especially on the line with Horvat and Saplakov, who maybe You know, they should be able to get him space, but if he can't create it himself, there's nothing he can do. And that fourth line of McLean, Cizikas, and Fashing, I mean, it just looks like that was cobbled together. To me, though, at least, and I think I can wrap up Islanders talk here, is it's P&P that have got to step it up. It's Pelech and Pulock. These guys have been the anchors for the defense for years, and I saw a ridiculous stat that in his last five games, I think Pulock is -8 or -9, and he's had, I think, over 10 giveaways or something like that. It's been really rough for Pulock in the recent stretch, but they have a home against Pittsburgh, and who knows, they could be 1 point out of a playoff spot in 24 hours. How about that? How about that? And so could the Rangers. And so could the Rangers.
It's
So.
crazy. I will say one last thing onto your point about Wah. I would be really, really disappointed if the Islanders cut ties with Patrick Wah if this season ends with them outside of the playoff picture. To me, I think he has the perfect personality to be a coach in this market, in a New York market that you know the fans, they demand. Obviously, winning and good standards, they also just demand effort, honesty, and intensity. I think he brings all that to the table. And if you build a team around him that is able to kind of take on Patrick Waugh's personality, you're gonna have a pretty damn good hockey team. So I think letting go of Waugh would be a mistake.
There was that narrative that Lou and Waugh were like kind of didn't like each other. Waugh did answer about that, and he says it's funny when people make it sound like Lou and I are not on the same page. It's totally false. We're talking every day about the lineup. But then this is what he says. He says Lou has the final say upstairs, and I have the final say behind the bench. And at the end of the day, we both care to win hockey games. Yeah, you say that, but then you'll go around and they'll be like, wow, Pierre Engvall didn't really play that well. And he's like, well, this is the team I was given. So, you know, like you sort of got to pick a narrative there. I mean, you can't go out and openly trash your GM, so I understand that. But unfortunately, it looks like Lou sort of has the whip hand here as far as Waugh's future. But I agree with you, Lou. I think it would be a complete mistake for them to get rid of Waugh so soon, especially because Lane Lambert, man, is it? It might be rude to call him an empty suit, but that's kind of what it felt like.
Another
It
body.
was nice that they could go into Toronto with him as the assistant and beat him, which was nice. But yeah, we'll see what happens. They play Pittsburgh today at 4 p.m. and then play them tomorrow as well. And that's hockey. That's hockey. We will be updating you guys through the second half of the season. Let's end this on a fun note. What's one team that's outside of the playoff picture that's going to make the playoffs? Let's do that. Let's do that.
Ooh.
And I'm going to start, and you guys are going to like this. Utah Hockey Club are going to be making the playoffs this year. I think that they totally have it in them. I know that they hit a skid as of late, but they were playing the Stars and the Avalanche. I don't fault them at all. But when they went on that streak where they beat the Avs 4-1, you beat the Sharks 4-3, you beat the Canucks 3-2, and then the Minnesota Wild 2-1, there's something in this team that works. And I mean, yeah, Clayton Keller is Clayton Keller, but you look at the lines up and down, and this is a well-rounded out team. Logan Cooley is your second line center. I like Lawson Crouse as your third line. There's someone on every line that is a threat, and I really, really like that. Sergachev and Mata have been great as their first pair. Kesselring, class act. Did you see that video of him fighting with that like 3-year-old kid? It was really cute. Play fighting, not legit fighting a 3-year-old. But yeah, they've been great. And Karel Vejmelka, most underrated goaltender in the NHL, I think. He was great in the last 2 years with Arizona and has just continued with that in Utah. A lot has to go right. I think the West is more competitive than the East as far as the wild card is concerned, but I like Utah Hockey Club nabbing that last wild card spot.
Ooh, It's tough to go
Honestly,
after Utah.
they might be, unfortunately for this segment, I think they might be the only valid answer. Because I'll say this, I'm not gonna give the Rangers the nod right now, the way that they're playing. And is there anyone else in the East, unless you expect Detroit to have a big
Pittsburgh?
turnaround? I think they're the only one. Was that?
How about Pittsburgh? They're
I don't.
they've picked it up recently. They started the year terribly, and they're
Don't buy it.
you don't buy it?
I don't. But you know who I think has been really fun and interesting, and they technically are in a playoff spot. I love
Ottawa?
what Ottawa's done with their season after
Yeah.
being, we're talking about soft tampering and Brady Tkachuk being a Ranger. Shane Pinto just did an interview with Chicklets and was talking about the team and the way they've really rallied together and they're starting to take form. I think Ottawa is a really fun, sneaky team that's going to be the team that a lot of pundits and I think a lot of people in the league look at and go, all right, that's the team that the Rangers need to replace. Or if the Red Wings want to get back into this, if Pittsburgh want to get back into this, you're leaping over Ottawa. That's the easiest team to leap. To me, I'd love to see Ottawa hang in this playoff picture a little bit because we all know when these Canadian cities, when they get a team that's good and they're able to get to the postseason, that the fans will rally around it, and the Ottawa fans have not had a ton to cheer about in recent memory. But Brady Tkachuk's a game changer, man. I do love Shane Pinto. Shout out his sister, set the stolen base record at Fordham. So it's all love. It all comes around.
See, I think it gets really hard because the Blues are like Utah, just a point out of a playoff spot in the West, but they're too injured for my liking for me to suggest that they'll be a playoff team come
Thoughts on
April.
Columbus? Thoughts on Columbus?
Columbus are in the same boat as Pittsburgh, right? Where they're sneaking into that conversation in the Eastern Conference, but I mean, for Columbus, for what that franchise went through in the offseason with the passing of Johnny Gaudreau, I for them to be even close to a playoff spot, I mean, is remarkable. So shout out to the Blue Jackets for that. I really do think that they've been able to punch above their weight to a degree. Their NHL 500, 15 wins, 15 losses, and never mind the OT losses, you get points for those. I do think that they're one really good stretch of games away from sneaking into a wild card. I mean, obviously they're just, what is it, 2 points out of it right now. But I don't think they have the roster that either the Penguins or the Ottawa Senators have. So I think it'd be tough to really put the Blue Jackets in that conversation. And the Flyers, for as good as the Flyers started the 2023-24 season and kind of petered their way out of the playoff discussion, I can't in good conscience put them in there. They've got the worst goal differential in the Metropolitan Division. But I, like you said about the Rangers, Lou, while they have the pieces there to be in a playoff spot, I mean, obviously they do. They're 2 wins away from the Stanley Cup last year. They've not been playing good enough hockey for anybody to say they'll definitely be in the playoffs. But like I said earlier in the show, if they sort it out, if they get through this next stretch, if they somehow put something together, then I could see it happening. I totally could. So I'll leave it at that. One final thing I will say that's a bit unrelated is shout out to Mackenzie Blackwood, my former neighbor who lived 3 blocks away from me, who has gotten a bag to play for the Colorado Avalanche now. He plays 5 games and they give him a 5-year, $5 million AAV. Look, I always knew he had the potential to be a really good NHL starter. He had back-to-back shutouts as a rookie, the first Devil to do that since Brodeur. He broke a lot of records as a young Devils goaltender, and he always showed the signs of being that good. So I'm happy for him. He's got his money. I think it's a bit premature because he's the man is just, knock on wood, so injury prone. Unfortunately, injuries always derailed him. But if he can be stable for a good Colorado, this is the first time he's played for a good team too. Let's face it, in the Colorado Avalanche, that could be exciting prospect for him and his career. And shout out Scott Wedgwood, also former Devils goalie. They've got Blackwood and Wedgwood in goal, and then they've also got another former Devil, Miles Wood. They've got all the old Devils Wood shotting up that locker room. So happy for all the Woods and happy for the former Devils finding success in Colorado. Congrats to
Yeah.
Mac on the big payday.
Congrats to Mac. Just one last thing on Columbus, by the way. Kirill Marchenko is having a career year.
Yes.
And I think honestly this is his breakout, and he's going to be a star in this league. 2022, 2023, 59 games played, 25 points, all right. 23, 24, 78 games played, 42 points, still not great. He's at 40 points already through 36 games. He's going to beat his career high probably in the next two games. So Kirill Marchenko is the one to look out for in Columbus. But yeah, it's rough out here unless if you're in Newark. So that's I think where we're gonna wrap this up. We'll see how the home homes go and how the Rangers handle the Tampa Bay Lightning, and we'll have a little bit of a clearer picture next week as to how these teams will round out their second half. But for James Burley in New Orlando, I'm Nick Palmer. We'll see you guys next week on 5 on 3. Thanks for listening, guys.